Chapter 13, An Unexpected Message. Sitting on the floor in the dining room, Kendra took a bite of her second peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Scouring the kitchen, she and Seth had found enough food to last for weeks. The pantry contained canned fruits and vegetables, unbroken jars of preserves, bread, oatmeal, cream of wheat, crackers, tuna, and lots of other stuff. The fridge still worked, even lying on its side, and they cleaned out the broken glass the best they could. There remained plenty of milk, cheese, and eggs. The freezer held a lot of meat. Kendra took another bite. Leaning back, she closed her eyes. She had felt hungry enough for a second sandwich, but now she doubted she would finish it.
"I'm exhausted," she announced.
"Me too," Seth said.
He put a piece of cheese on a cracker and topped it with a sardine bathed in mustard sauce.
"My eyes feel itchy."
"My throat feels prickly," Kendra said. "The sun isn't even down."
"What are we going to do about Grandpa?"
"I think the best thing we can do is get some rest. We'll think more clearly in the morning."
"How long did we sleep last night?" Seth asked.
About a half an hour," Kendra guessed.
"We've stayed up for almost 2 days."
"Now you'll sleep for 2 days."
"Whatever," said Seth.
"It's true. Your glands will secrete a cocoon."
"I'm not that gullible."
"That's why you're so hungry. You're storing up fat for hibernation."
Seth finished the cracker.
"You should try a sardine."
"I don't eat fish with the head still attached."
"The heads are the best part. You can feel the eyes pop when you..."
"Enough!"
Kendra stood up.
"I need to get to bed."
Seth rose as well.
"Me too."
They climbed the stairs, passed down the cluttered hall, and mounted the steps to the attic. The room had taken a beating, everything except the beds. Goldilocks strutted over to the corner and started clucking. Her feed was scattered across the floor.
"You're right that the salt didn't seem to be working," Seth said.
"It might only work in here."
"They were jerks, but those goat guys were pretty funny."
"They're called satyrs," Kendra said.
"I need to find some C batteries. They said they'd give us gold."
"They didn't say how much."
"Still, trading batteries for gold? I could become a millionaire."
"I'm not sure I'd trust those guys."
Kendra flopped onto her bed, face in her pillow.
"What does Goldilocks keep clucking about?"
"I bet she misses her cage."
Seth crossed the floor to the flustered hen.
"Kendra, you better come see this."
"Can I look in the morning?"
she said, her voice muffled by the pillow.
"You need to look now."
Kendra pushed herself off her bed and walked over to Seth. In the corner on the floor, more than 100 feed kernels had been arranged to form 6 letters. I-M-G-R-A-M.
"You've got to be kidding," Kendra said.
She gave Seth a suspicious glance.
"Did you write this?"
"No, no way!"
Kendra squatted in front of Goldilocks.
"You're my Grandma Sorensen?"
The hen bobbed her head as if in affirmation.
"Was that a yes?"
The head bobbed again.
"Give me a no so I can be sure," Kendra said.
Goldilocks shook her head.
"How did this happen?"
Seth asked.
"Somebody transformed you?"
The chicken bobbed her head.
"How do we change you back?" Kendra asked.
Goldilocks held still.
"Why didn't Grandpa change her back?"
Seth asked.
"Did Grandpa Sorensen try to restore you?"
Kendra inquired. Goldilocks bobbed her head and then shook it.
"Yes and no?"
The head nodded.
"He tried but failed?" Kendra guessed.
The hen gave another affirmative.
"Do you know a way we can change you back?"
Kendra asked. Another head bob.
"Is it something we can do in the house?"
Kendra asked. The head shook.
Do we need to take you to the witch?
Seth tried. The head bobbed, and then the hen flapped her wings, moving away.
Wait, Grandma!
Kendra reached for the hen, but the flustered bird dodged her grasp.
She's freaking out!
Seth chased her down.
Grandma, he said, can you still hear us?
The hen made no acknowledgement of comprehension.
Grandma,
Kendra said,
can you still respond to us?
The chicken squirmed. Seth kept hold of her. The chicken pecked his hand, and he dropped her. They watched Goldilocks. For several minutes, she did nothing to suggest abnormal intelligence and offered no recognizable reaction to any questions.
She was answering us before, right?
Kendra asked.
She wrote us a message,
Seth said, pointing at the letters in the corner.
She must have had just a short window to communicate with us,
Kendra reasoned.
Once she got the message across, she left it in our hands.
Why hasn't she spoken up before?
I don't know. Maybe she's tried, but we never got the message.
Seth cocked his head thoughtfully and then gave a small shrug.
Do we take her to the witch in the morning?
I don't know. Muriel only has one knot left.
No matter what, we don't undo the last knot. But maybe we could bargain with her.
Bargain with what?
Kendra asked.
We could bring food or other stuff. Things to make her more comfortable in that shack.
I don't picture her going for it. She'll know we're desperate to fix Grandma.
We won't give her another choice.
Kendra bit her lip.
What if she won't budge? She wouldn't for Grandpa. Do we set Muriel free if she will change Grandma back?
No way,
said Seth.
As soon as she gets free, what keeps her from turning all of us into chickens?
Grandpa said you can't use magic against others here unless they use it on you first. We never caused Muriel any harm, did we?
But she's a witch,
Seth said.
Why would she be locked up if she wasn't dangerous?
I'm not saying I want to let her go. I'm saying we might be in an emergency situation where we have no other options. It might be worth the risk in order to get Grandma back to help us.
Seth thought about that.
What if we can get her to tell us where Grandpa is?
Or both,
Kendra said, getting excited.
I bet she would do just about anything to be released. I'm sure she would do those two things at least. Then we might actually get out of this mess.
You're right that we don't have many options.
We should sleep on it,
Kendra said.
We're both worn out. We can decide what to do in the morning.
Okay.
Kendra climbed into bed, slid under the covers, let her head sink into the pillow, and fell asleep before another thought entered her mind.
Maybe we shouldn't have rinsed the milk out of our clothes,
Seth said.
Then we could churn butter while we walk.
Foul?
By the end of the day, I might have had yogurt in my armpits.
You're psychotic,
said Kendra.
Then we could add some of Lena's jam and make it fruit at the bottom.
Quit it.
Seth seemed pleased with himself. Goldilocks rode in the wheelbarrow inside a burlap sack he had found in the pantry. They had tried to bend the cage back into shape, but could not get the door to stay on. The sack had a drawstring, which they pulled snugly around the hen's neck so her head could stick out. It was hard to think of the chicken as Grandma Sorensen. The hen had not performed a single grandmotherly action all morning. She showed no reaction to the announcement that they were going to see Muriel, and she had laid an egg on Kendra's bed during the night. Kendra and Seth had awakened just before sunrise. In the barn, they had found the wheelbarrow, which they determined might be easier than carrying Goldilocks the entire way to the ivy shack. It was Kendra's turn pushing the wheelbarrow. The chicken seemed serene. She was probably enjoying the fresh air. The weather was pleasant, sunny and warm, without being hot. Kendra wondered how the negotiations with Muriel would go. In the end, they had decided it would do no harm to see what terms they could reach with the witch.
Then they could base their final decision on the facts of what Muriel would be willing to do, rather than conjecture. They had loaded food, clothes, tools, and utensils in the wheelbarrow in case they might be able to barter with comforts instead of freedom. Most of the clothes had been mangled on Midsummer Eve, but they found a few unshredded items for Grandma to wear in case they succeeded in transforming her. They had made sure to feed the chickens some milk in the morning, as well as to drink some themselves. The trails to the shack were not difficult to remember. Presently, they identified the leafy structure where the witch lived. Leaving the wheelbarrow, Seth carried the chicken while Kendra collected an armful of bartering items. Kendra had already reminded Seth to stay calm and be polite no matter what happened, but she repeated the admonition. They heard strange music as they drew near the shack, like somebody playing a rubber band while clacking castanets. When they got around to the front door, they found the grimy old hag playing a mouth harp with one hand while making her limberjack dance with the other.
I did not hope to have visitors again so soon,
laughed the witch when her song ended.
Pity about Stanley?
What do you know about our grandpa? Seth asked.
Oh, the woods are all abuzz with news of his abduction, Muriel said. The Nyadic housekeeper as well, if one is to lend an ear to the gossip. Quite the scandal.
Do you know where they are? Seth tried.
Oh, look at all the lovely gifts you brought me, the witch gushed, clasping her veiny hands together. The quilt is gorgeous, but it would be ruined in my humble dwelling. I'll not let you waste your generosity on me. I would not know what to do with such niceties.
We brought these to trade, Kendra said.
Trade?
The witch asked theatrically, smacking her lips.
For my tea? Nonsense, child. I would not dream of exacting a toll for my hospitality. Come inside, and the three of us shall drink together.
Not to trade for tea, Seth said, holding up Goldilocks. We want you to change our grandma back into herself.
In exchange for a chicken?
She is the chicken, Kendra explained. The witch grinned, stroking her chin.
I thought I recognized her, she mused. Oh, you poor dears! One guardian carried off in the night, the other reduced to poultry.
We can offer you a quilt, a bathrobe, a toothbrush, and a lot of homemade food, Kendra said.
Oh, charming as that may be, Muriel said, I would require the energy of a knot unraveling to work any spell capable of restoring your grandmother to her former state.
We can't untie your last knot, Seth said. Grandpa would be furious.
The witch shrugged.
My predicament is simple. Imprisoned in this shack, I am curtailed in my abilities. The problem has nothing to do with my willingness to compromise. The dilemma is that the only way for me to fulfill your request would be to harness the power stored in the final knot. The decision lies in your hands. I have no other options.
If we untie the last knot, will you also tell us where our grandpa was taken? Kendra asked.
Oh, child, I would love nothing more than to reunite you with your lost grandfather. But the truth of the matter is, I haven't the foggiest notion where he was taken. Again, it would require loosing my knot in order for me to marshal sufficient power to discern his whereabouts.
Could you find Grandpa and change Grandma with the power from one knot? Kendra asked.
Lamentably, I would have the opportunity to accomplish only one feat or the other. Both would not be possible.
Unless you figure out a way, you won't have a chance to do either, Seth said.
Then we have reached an impasse, the witch apologized. If you tell me we have no deal unless I am able to accomplish the impossible, then we have no deal. I could fulfill either of your requests, but not both.
If we have you change Grandma back, Kendra asked, could you help us find Grandpa once you're free?
Perhaps,
the witch mused.
Yes, without guarantees. Once free, I could probably use my abilities to shed light on the location of your grandfather.
How do we know you won't attack us if we let you go?
Seth asked.
A fair question,
Muriel said.
I might be embittered by long years of imprisonment and eager to work mischief once released. However, I give you my word as a practitioner of the ancient art that I will not inflict any harm upon you or your grandmother upon my deliverance from this confinement. If I held any malice, it would be toward those who initiated my incarceration, enemies who passed from this life decades ago, not those who set me free. If anything, I would consider myself indebted.
And you would promise to help us find Grandpa Sorensen? Kendra said.
Oh, your grandmother might refuse my help. She and your grandfather have never held me in much esteem. But if she will accept my assistance in locating Stan, I will give it.
We need to talk about this in private, Kendra said.
Be my guest, Muriel said.
Kendra and Seth returned to the path. Kendra dumped her bartering items in the wheelbarrow. She spoke in a soft whisper.
I don't think we have any other choice.
I don't like how nice she's being, said Seth. It's almost scarier than before. I think she's really anxious to get out.
I know, but I think we're just as anxious to restore Grandma and maybe find Grandpa.
She's a liar, Seth cautioned. I don't think we can count on any of her promises.
Probably not.
We should expect her to attack us as soon as she's free. If not, great, but I brought salt. Whatever good that will do.
Don't forget, we'll have Grandma to help us handle her, Kendra said.
Grandma might not know anything about fighting witches.
I'm sure she's learned a trick or two. Let's try to ask her.
Seth held up the hen. Kendra stroked her head gently.
Grandma Sorensen, Kendra said. Ruth, I need you to listen to me. If you can hear me, we need you to answer. This is very important.
The hen appeared to be listening.
Should we untie the last knot to have Muriel Taggart restore you?
The head bobbed.
Was that a yes?
The head bobbed again.
Can you give us a no?
The hen did not respond.
Grandma, Ruth, can you shake your head so we can be sure you hear us?
Again, the chicken made no acknowledgement.
Maybe it took all she had to answer your first question, Seth speculated.
It did seem like she nodded, Kendra said, and I don't know what else we can do. Freeing the witch is a high price to pay, but is it worse than having no hope of finding Grandpa and keeping Grandma trapped forever as a chicken?
We should free her.
Kendra paused, scrutinizing her feelings. Was this really their only option? It seemed to be.
Let's go back, she agreed.
They returned to the doorway of the shack.
We want you to restore Grandma, Kendra said.
You will voluntarily sunder my last knot, the final impediment to my independence, if I restore your grandmother to her human form?
Yes. How do we do it?
Ah, just say, of my own free will, I sever this knot, and then blow on it. You should probably find something for your grandmother to wear. She will not have any clothes on.
Kendra ran to the wheelbarrow and returned with the bathrobe and a pair of slippers. Muriel stood in the doorway, clutching the rope.
Lay your grandmother at my threshold, she instructed.
I want to blow on the knot,
Seth said. Sure, Kendra answered.
You let Grandma out of the bag.
Kendra squatted and pulled the mouth of the bag wide open. Muriel held the rope out to Seth. The chicken looked up, ruffling her feathers and flapping her wings. Kendra tried to steady her, disgusted by the feel of slender bones moving beneath her hands.
Of my own free will, I sever this knot, Seth said,
as Goldilocks squawked noisily. He blew, and the knot unraveled. Muriel extended both hands over the flustered hen and began softly chanting indecipherable words. The air wavered. Kendra squeezed the squirming hen. At first, it felt like bubbles were shooting through the flesh of the bird. Then the delicate bones started to churn. Kendra dropped Goldilocks and stepped back. Kendra saw everything as if through funhouse lenses. Muriel appeared distorted, first stretching broad, then tall. Seth became an hourglass with a wide head, a tiny waist, and clownish feet. Rubbing her eyes failed to cure her warped vision. When she looked down, the ground curved away in all directions. She leaned and swung her arms to maintain her balance. The funhouse Muriel began to ripple, as did the startling image of Goldilocks shedding feathers as she expanded into a person. The scene grew dim, as if clouds had blocked the sun, and a dark aura gathered around Muriel and Grandma. The darkness expanded, momentarily obscuring everything, and then Grandma stood before them, completely naked. Kendra put the bathrobe over her shoulders. From inside the shack came a sound like the rushing of a terrible wind. The ground rumbled.
Get down,
Grandma said, pulling Kendra to the ground. Seth also fell flat. A furious gale blasted the walls of the shack into shrapnel. The roof rocketed beyond the treetops, a geyser of wooden confetti. The stumps split down the center. Fragments of timber and ivy whistled in all directions, clattering against the trunks of trees and slashing through the undergrowth. Kendra raised her head. Dressed in rags, Muriel gaped in wonder. Chips of wood continued to fall like hail, along with fluttering bits of ivy. Muriel grinned, displaying deformed teeth and inflamed gums. She began to chuckle, tears brimming in her eyes. She flung her wrinkled arms wide.
Ah! Emancipation! She cried. Justice at last!
Grandma Sorensen rose to her feet. She was shorter and stouter than Muriel, with hair the color of cinnamon and sugar.
You must vacate this property immediately.
Muriel glowered at Grandma, the joy in her gaze eclipsed by spite. A tear escaped and slid down a crease to her chin.
This is my thanks for unbinding your curse?
You have your reward for the services you rendered. You have emerged from confinement. Eviction from this preserve is the consequence of prior indiscretions. My debts have been paid. You are not the caretaker. My authority is the same as my husband's. In his absence, I am indeed the caretaker. I invite you to leave and never return.
Muriel turned and began tromping away.
Where I go is my business.
She did not look back.
Not on my preserve.
Your preserve, is it? I object to your claims of ownership.
Muriel still had not looked back. Grandma started walking after her, an old woman in a bathrobe trailing an old woman dressed in rags.
New crimes will entail new punishments, Grandma warned.
You might be surprised who administers the penalties.
Don't provoke new enmity. Depart in peace.
Grandma quickened her pace and caught hold of Muriel by the upper arm. Muriel twisted free, turning to face Grandma.
Tread lightly, Ruth. If you seek trouble here and now, in front of the little ones, I will oblige you. This is the wrong moment to cling to antiquated protocol. Things have changed more than you realize. I suggest you depart before I regain authority here.
Seth ran toward them. Grandma took a step back. Seth flung a handful of salt at the witch. It had no effect. Muriel pointed at him.
Your recompense is coming, my bold little whelp. I have a long memory.
Your actions require retribution, Grandma warned.
Muriel was striding away again.
You speak to deaf ears.
You said you'd tell us how to find our grandpa,
Kendra called. Muriel laughed without looking back.
Hold your tongues, children, Grandma said. Muriel, I have commanded you to depart. Your defiance is an act of war.
You issue evictions in order to build a case for wrongdoing and thereby justify retaliation,
Muriel said.
I do not fear a feud with you.
Grandma turned away from Muriel.
Kendra, come here.
Grandma pulled Seth to her in a tight hug. When Kendra drew near, she embraced her as well.
I am sorry for misleading you, children. I should not have guided you to Muriel. I did not realize this was her final knot.
What do you mean?
Kendra said.
You heard us talking.
Grandma smiled sadly.
As a chicken, thinking clearly becomes an exhausting challenge. My mind was in a haze. To interact with you like a person, even for a moment, required tremendous concentration.
Seth nodded toward Muriel.
Should we stop her? I bet the three of us could take her.
If we attack, she will be able to defend herself with magic,
Grandma said.
We would forfeit the protection afforded by the foundational covenants of the treaty.
Have we messed things up?
Seth asked.
Setting her free, I mean.
Things were already dismal,
Grandma said.
Having her on the loose certainly complicates the situation. Whether my assistants can compensate for her interference remains to be seen.
Grandma looked flushed. She fanned her face.
Your grandfather left us in quite a predicament.
It wasn't his fault,
Seth said. Grandma bent over, placing her hands on her knees. Kendra steadied her.
I'm all right, Kendra. Just a little woozy.
She stood up experimentally.
Tell me what happened. I know undesirable beings entered the house and took Stan.
They took Lena, too, and I think they turned Dale into a statue,
Kendra reported.
We found him in the yard.
Grandma nodded.
As caretaker, Stan is a valuable trophy. Same with a fallen nymph. By contrast, Dale seemed unimpressive and was left behind. Any clue who took them?
We found some footprints near Dale,
Seth said.
Did they lead you anywhere?
No,
Seth said.
Have you any idea where Grandpa and Lena are being held?
No.
Muriel probably knows,
Grandma said.
She has an alliance with the imps.
Speaking of Muriel, Kendra said, where did she go?
They all looked around. Muriel was no longer in sight. Grandma frowned.
She must have special means of hiding or traveling. No matter. We aren't equipped to deal with her now.
What do we do?
Seth asked.
Our first order of business is to find your grandpa. Learning his location should dictate how best to proceed.
How do we do that?
Grandma sighed.
Well, our nearest option would be Nero.
Who?
Kendra said.
A cliff troll. He has a seeing stone. If we can successfully bargain with him, he should be able to reveal Stan's location.
Do you know him well?
Seth asked.
Never met him. Your grandfather had dealings with him once. It will be dangerous. But at present, he is probably our best alternative. We should hurry. I'll tell you more on the way.
Thank you.
Chapter 14. Trolling for Grandpa.
"Have you ever heard people conversing while you're falling asleep?"
Grandma said.
"The words reach you from a distance, and you can barely glimpse the meaning."
"That happened to me in a motel once, when we were on a trip,"
Kendra said.
"Mom and Dad were talking. I fell asleep, and their conversation turned into a dream."
"Then to some degree you can grasp my state of mind as a chicken. You say it is June? My last clear memories are from February, when the spell was enacted. For the first couple of days, I remained fairly alert. Over time, I lapsed into a twilight consciousness, incapable of rational thought, unable to interpret my surroundings as a human would."
"Weird," Seth said.
"I recognized you kids when you arrived, but it was through a clouded lens. My mind did not reawaken until you let those creatures in through the window. The shock jolted me out of my stupor. It was a struggle to cling to my elevated consciousness. I cannot describe the concentration it required to write that message to you. My mind wanted to slip away, to relax. I wanted to eat the delicious kernels, not arrange them into bizarre patterns."
They traveled along a wide dirt road. Rather than head back toward the house, they had continued on the trail beyond the ivy shack, venturing deeper into the forest. The trail had eventually forked and then intersected the road they were currently following. The sun blazed overhead, the air was heavy and humid, and the forest remained unnaturally silent all around them. Kendra and Seth had brought a pair of jeans, but they turned out to be from Grandma's skinnier days and were not even close to fitting. The tennis shoes belonged to Grandpa and were several sizes too big, so Grandma now wore a bathing suit under her robe and her feet remained in slippers. Grandma raised her hands, staring as she opened and closed them.
"Oh, strange to have proper fingers again," she murmured.
"How did you become a chicken in the first place?"
Seth asked.
"Pride made me careless," Grandma said. "A sobering reminder that none of us are immune to the dangers here, even when we imagine we have the upper hand. Let's save the details for another time."
"Why didn't Grandpa change you back?"
Kendra asked. Grandma's eyebrows shot up.
"Probably because I kept laying eggs for his breakfast. I like to think that if he had taken me to Muriel in the first place, I could have prevented all this nonsense from happening. But I suppose he was searching for an alternate cure for my condition."
"Besides asking Muriel," Seth said.
"Exactly."
"Then why did he have Muriel cure me?"
"I'm sure he knew your parents would return soon, leaving insufficient time to discover another remedy."
"You had no idea Seth had become a mutant walrus and been restored by Muriel?"
Kendra said.
"I missed all that,"
Grandma said.
"As a hen, most details escaped me. When I urged you to take me to Muriel, I assumed she still had two knots remaining. Only when I looked up and observed the single knot did I begin to fathom the actual predicament. By then, it was too late." "Incidentally, how did you end up as a walrus?"
Seth and Kendra related the particulars about turning the fairy into an imp and the subsequent retribution. Grandma listened, asking a few clarifying questions. As the path curved around a tall thicket, a covered bridge came into view up ahead. Spanning a ravine, the bridge was composed of dark wood. Although aged and weathered, it appeared to be in reasonably good repair.
"Our destination draws near,"
Grandma said.
"Beyond the bridge?"
Kendra asked.
"Down in the ravine."
Grandma stopped, studying the foliage off to either side of the road.
"I am suspicious of the stillness in these woods.
A great tension rests upon Fablehaven today.
She resumed walking.
Because of Grandpa?
Seth asked.
Yes, and your newfound enmity with the fairies. But I worry there may be something more. I am anxious to speak with Nero.
Will he help us? Kendra asked.
He would rather harm us. Trolls can be violent and unpredictable. I would not solicit information from him if our situation were less dire. Well, what's the plan?
Seth asked.
Our only chance is clever bargaining. Cliff trolls are cunning and ruthless, but their avarice can be a weakness.
Avarice?
Seth asked.
Greed. Cliff trolls are miserly creatures, treasure hoarders, cunning negotiators. They relish the thrill of besting an opponent. Whatever agreement we reach, Nero will have to feel like the undisputed victor. I only hope we can determine something he values that we are willing to part with.
What if we can't?
Kendra said.
We must. If we fail to reach an arrangement, Nero will not let us leave unscathed.
They arrived at the brink of the ravine. Kendra placed a hand against the bridge and leaned forward to look down. It was surprisingly deep. Tenacious vegetation clung to the steep walls. A narrow stream trickled along the bottom.
How do we get down there?
Carefully,
Grandma said, taking a seat at the edge of the precipice. Rolling over onto her stomach, she started backing down the slope feet first, looking ridiculous in her robe and slippers. The incline was not completely vertical, but most of the descent was quite steep.
If we fall, we'll tumble all the way to the bottom,
Kendra observed.
A sensible reason not to fall,
Grandma agreed, moving carefully downward.
Come along. It looks worse than it is. Just find solid handholds and take it one step at a time.
Seth followed Grandma, and then Kendra started down, desperately hugging the side of the ravine, taking tentative steps, hunting blindly for the next place to rest her foot. But Grandma was right. Once she got going, the climb was less difficult than it appeared. There were many handholds, including scrawny bushes with well-anchored stems. After proceeding gingerly at first, she grew in confidence and increased the speed of her descent. When Kendra reached the bottom, Seth was squatting near a cluster of blossoms at the edge of the stream. Grandma Sorensen stood nearby.
Took you long enough,
Seth said.
I was being careful.
I've never seen somebody move an inch per hour before. No time for bickering,
Grandma said.
Kendra did just fine, Seth. We need to hurry along. I like the smell of these flowers,
Seth said.
Come away from those,
Grandma insisted.
Why? They smell great. Take a whiff. Those flowers are perilous, and we're in a hurry.
Grandma waved for him to follow and started walking, picking her way carefully along the rocky floor of the ravine.
Why are they dangerous?
Seth asked, catching up with her.
Those are a peculiar class of lotus blossoms. The smell is intoxicating, the taste divine. A tiny nibble of a single petal carries you away into a lethargic trance populated by vivid hallucinations.
Like drugs?
More addictive than most drugs. Sampling a lotus blossom awakens a craving that will never be silenced. Many have wasted their lives pursuing and consuming the petals of those bewitching flowers.
Well, I wasn't going to eat one.
No. Sit and smell them for a few minutes, and you'll end up with a petal in your mouth before you know what you're doing.
They proceeded in silence for a few hundred yards. The walls of the ravine grew more sheer and rocky as they progressed. They noticed a few other clusters of lotus blossoms.
Where is Nero?
Kendra asked. Grandma scanned the wall of the ravine.
Not much farther. He lives up on a ledge.
We have to climb up to him?
Stan said Nero lowered a rope ladder. What's that?
Seth asked, pointing up ahead.
I'm not sure,
Grandma said. A good distance down the ravine, about 20 upright logs of increasing height led from the edge of the stream to the wall of the ravine. The highest log granted access to a rocky ledge.
It might be our destination. This is not what Stan described.
They arrived at the logs. The lowest was 3 feet tall, the next was 6 feet, and each subsequent log stood roughly 3 feet taller than the previous one, until the tallest rose about 60 feet high. The logs were arranged about 3 feet apart in a staggered row. None of the logs had any limbs. Short or tall, they were all of a similar circumference, about 18 inches, and they were all cut flat across the top. Placing a hand beside her mouth, Grandma called up to the ledge.
Nero, we would like to meet with you.
Not a good day,
a voice answered.
Try me next week.
They could not see the speaker.
We must meet today or never, Grandma insisted.
Who has such an urgent need?
The resonant voice inquired.
Ruth Sorensen and her grandchildren.
Ruth Sorensen, what is your request?
We need to find Stan.
The caretaker? Yes, I could discern his location. Ascend the stairs and we will discuss terms.
Grandma looked around.
You don't mean these logs? She called.
I most assuredly do.
Stan said you had a ladder.
That was before I set up these logs. No small undertaking.
Climbing them looks precarious.
Call it a filter,
Nero said.
A means to ensure that those who seek my services are in earnest.
So we must climb the logs for the privilege of speaking with you? How about we talk from down here?
Unacceptable.
Your stairs are equally unacceptable,
Grandma said firmly.
If your need is dire, you will scale them,
observed the troll.
What have you done with the ladder?
I still have it.
May we please climb it instead? I am not dressed for an obstacle course. We'll make it worth your while.
How about a compromise? One of you climb the logs. Then I will lower the ladder for the other two. Final offer. Concede or go acquire your information elsewhere.
I'll do it,
Seth said. Grandma looked at him.
If anyone is climbing those logs, it will be me. I'm taller and better able to reach from log to log. I have smaller feet, so the logs will feel bigger. I'll keep my balance easier. Sorry, Seth. This is something I must do.
Seth dashed over to the first log, scrambled onto it without much trouble, and, taking a jump as if he were playing leapfrog, ended up seated atop the second log. Grandma hurried over to the second log.
You get down from there!
Seth shakily got to his feet. Leaning forward, he placed his hands on the third log. From his position on the second log, the top of the third came almost to the middle of his chest. Another leapfrog jump, and he sat atop the 9-foot log.
I can do this,
he said.
It won't be so easy as you get higher, Grandma warned. You come down and let me do it. No way! I already have one dead, Grandma!
Kendra watched silently. From his seated position, Seth shifted to his knees and rose unsteadily to his feet. He leapt to the next log, now well out of Grandma's reach. Kendra was quietly glad Seth was climbing the logs. She could not picture Grandma doing it successfully, especially dressed in a bathrobe and slippers. At the very least, think of all the terrible places she could get splinters. And Kendra could very clearly envision Grandma Sorensen crumpled in a lifeless heap at the base of a log.
Seth Andrew Sorensen, you mind your grandmother. I want you to come down from there. Stop distracting me, he said. It may seem like fun on these lower logs,
But when you get higher...
I climb high stuff all the time, Seth insisted. My friends and I climb up in the bars under the bleachers at the high school. If we fell there, we could die too.
He rose to his feet. He seemed to be getting better at it. Seth landed on the next log, straddling it for a moment before getting to his knees.
Be careful, Grandma said. Don't think about the height. I know you're trying to help, Seth said, but please stop talking.
Grandma came and stood by Kendra.
Can he do this? She whispered. He has a good chance. He's really brave and pretty athletic. The height might not get to him. I would freak out.
Kendra wanted to look away. She did not want to see him fall, but she could not take her eyes from her brother as he leapfrogged from log to log, higher and higher. As he jumped to the 13th, almost 40 feet high now, he leaned precariously to one side. Chills raced through Kendra as if she were the one losing her balance. Seth gripped with his legs and leaned the other way, regaining his equilibrium. Kendra could breathe again. 14, 15, 16. Kendra glanced at Grandma. He was going to make it. 17. He got to his feet, wobbling a bit, hands out to either side.
Oh, these tall ones shake a little, he called down.
Seth leapfrogged to the next log and landed awkwardly, teetering too far to one side. For a moment he hovered on the brink of regaining his balance. Every muscle in Kendra's body clenched in horror. Arms pinwheeling, Seth fell. Kendra shrieked. She could not look away. Something flashed from the ledge, a slender black chain with a metal weight at the end. The chain coiled around one of Seth's legs. Instead of falling to the ground, he swung into the cliff, colliding roughly with a stone wall. For the first time, Kendra had a view of Nero. Built like a man, the troll had reptilian features. A few bright yellow markings decorated his glossy black body. He held in a webbed hand the chain from which Seth dangled. Muscles bunching powerfully, Nero hauled Seth up to the ledge. They passed out of sight, and then a rope ladder unfurled from the ledge, unwinding all the way to the base of the cliff.
Are you okay?
Kendra yelled up at Seth.
I'm fine, he answered. Just had the wind knocked out of me.
Grandma started up the ladder. Kendra followed, forcing herself to focus on grabbing the next rung, denying the impulse to look down. At length, she reached the ledge. She moved to the rear of the ledge, standing beside the low mouth of a dark cave from which wafted a cool draft. Nero looked even more intimidating up close. Tiny, sleek scales covered his sinuous body. Though he was not much taller than Grandma, the thickness of his brawny physique made him seem massive. He had a snout rather than a nose, and bulging eyes that never blinked. A row of sharp spines ran from the center of his forehead to the small of his back.
Thank you for rescuing Seth, Grandma said.
I told myself if the boy makes it past 15 logs, I will assist him if he falls. I admit that I am curious to hear what you would exchange to learn the location of your husband.
Tell us what you have in mind, Grandma said.
A long gray tongue popped out of his mouth and licked his right eye.
You would have me speak first? So be it. I do not ask much, an insignificant trifle, for the proprietress of this illustrious preserve. 6 coffers of gold, 12 puncheons of silver, 3 casks of uncut gems, and a bucket of opals.
Kendra looked at Grandma. Could she possibly own that much treasure?
A reasonable sum, Grandma said. Unfortunately, we have brought no such riches with us.
I can wait while you retrieve the payment, if you leave the girl as collateral.
Regrettably, we lack the time to shuttle treasure to you,
unless you would reveal Stan's location before receiving compensation?
Nero licked his left eye and grinned, a hideous sight that displayed double rows of needle teeth.
I must be paid in full before fulfilling your request.
Grandma folded her arms.
I take it you already possess great caches of treasure. It surprises me that such a meager financial offering as I could supply would entice you to trade.
Go on, he said.
You are offering us a service. Perhaps we should repay you with a service as well.
Nero nodded thoughtfully.
Possible. The boy has some spirit. Indenture him to me for 50 years.
Seth looked desperately at Grandma. Grandma frowned.
I hope to leave the possibility of future business open. Therefore, I do not wish to leave you feeling slighted. The boy has spirit, but little ability. You would assume the burden of training him as a servant and find yourself yoked to his incompetence. You would add more value to his life through education than he would to yours through service.
Your candor is appreciated,
Nero said,
although you have much to learn about bargaining. I begin to wonder whether you have anything of value to offer. If not, our discussion will not end well.
You speak of value,
Grandma said.
I ask, what value is treasure to a wealthy troll? The more riches he possesses, the less each new acquisition improves his total worth. A bar of gold means much more to a pauper than to a king. I also question what value a frail human servant would have to a master infinitely more wise and capable. Consider the situation. We want you to render a service of value to us, something we cannot do for ourselves. You should expect no less.
I agree. Take care. Your words are spreading a net at your feet.
A lethal edge was creeping into his voice.
True, unless I am trained to deliver a service of extraordinary value. Have you ever received a massage?
Are you serious? The idea has always struck me as ridiculous.
The idea seems absurd to all the uninitiated. Beware of rash judgments. We all pursue wealth, and those who gather the most can afford certain comforts unavailable to the masses. Foremost among these luxuries is the indescribable release and relaxation of a massage at the hands of one skilled in the art.
And you claim to be skilled in this so-called art?
Trained by a true master, my ability is so great as to be nearly beyond purchase. The only person in the world who has received a full massage at my hands is the caretaker himself, and this because I am his woman. I could give you a full massage, kneading and soothing every muscle in your body. The experience would redefine your understanding of pleasure.
Nero shook his head.
It will take more than florid words and grandiose promises to persuade me.
Consider my offer in perspective,
Grandma said.
People pay exorbitant sums for an expert massage. You'll receive yours at no cost, merely in exchange for a service. How long would it take you to ascertain Stan's location?
A few moments.
A massage will take me 30 grueling minutes, and you will be experiencing something new, a delight you have never encountered in all your long years. A similar opportunity may never arise again.
Nero licked an eye.
Granted, I have never received a massage. I could name many things I have never done, mainly because I have no interest in doing them. I have sampled human food and found it wanting. I am not convinced that I will find a massage as satisfying as you describe.
Grandma studied him. 3 minutes. I will give you a sample for 3 minutes. It will afford you only a narrow glimpse of the unspeakable bliss that awaits, but should place you in a position to make a more educated decision.
Very well. I see no harm in a demonstration.
Give me your hand.
My hand?
I will massage a single hand. You will have to use your imagination to envision how this would feel across your entire body.
He held out a hand. Grandma Sorensen took it and began working his palm with her thumbs. At first he tried to keep a straight face, but his mouth began to twitch, and his eyes began to roll.
How is that? Grandma asked. Too deep?
His meager lips quivered.
Just right, he purred.
Grandma continued expertly rubbing his palm and the back of his hand. He started licking his eyes compulsively. She finished with his fingers.
The demonstration is concluded, she announced.
30 minutes of that, you say, across my whole body?
The children will assist me, Grandma said. We will trade a service for a service.
But I could exchange my service for something more enduring, for treasure. A single massage is too fleeting.
The law of diminishing returns applies to massages, as it does to most things. The first is the best, and all you really need. Besides, you can always exchange your services for treasure. This may be your only chance to receive an expert massage.
He held out his other hand.
One more example to help me decide.
No more samples.
You offer just one massage? What if you stay on as my personal masseuse for 12 years?
Grandma grew stern.
I am not petitioning you to look in that stone of yours multiple times for multiple purposes. I am requesting a single piece of information, a service for a service. That is my offer, lopsided in your favor. The massage takes 30 minutes versus mere moments for you to peer into your stone.
But you need the information,
Nero reminded her.
I do not need a massage.
Satisfying needs is the burden of the poor. The wealthy and powerful can afford to indulge their wants and whims. If you pass on this opportunity, you will always wonder what you missed.
Don't do it, Grandma, Kendra said. Just give him the treasure.
Nero held up a finger.
This proposition is unorthodox and against my better judgment, but the idea of a massage intrigues me, and I am rarely intrigued. However, 30 minutes is too short. Say 2 hours.
60 minutes,
Grandma said flatly.
90,
Nero countered. Grandma wrung her hands. She folded and unfolded her arms. She rubbed her brow.
90 minutes is too long, Kendra said. You've never given Grandpa a massage longer than an hour.
Hold your tongue, child,
Grandma snapped.
90 or no deal,
Nero said. Grandma sighed in resignation.
All right, 90 minutes.
Very well, I accept. But if I do not approve of the entire massage, the deal is off.
Grandma shook her head.
No caveats. A single 90-minute massage in exchange for the location of Stan Sorensen. You will treasure the memory until the end of your days.
Nero eyed Kendra and Seth before fixing Grandma with a shrewd gaze.
Agreed. How do we proceed?
The best table Grandma could find was a fairly narrow stone shelf near the mouth of the cave. Nero stretched out on the shelf, and Grandma showed Kendra and Seth how to massage his legs and feet. She demonstrated how and where to use their knuckles and the heels of their hands.
He's very strong, she said,
grinding her knuckles against the bottom of his foot.
Lean into it as much as you want.
She set down his leg and stood beside his head.
The children have their instructions, Nero. The 90 minutes start now.
Kendra hesitantly laid her hands on the troll's bulging calf. Although they were not wet, the scales felt slimy. She had held a snake before, and the texture of Nero's scaly skin was quite similar. With Nero lying prone, Grandma went to work on the back of his neck and shoulders. She employed a variety of techniques, probing with her thumbs, rubbing with her palms, pressing with her fists, digging with her elbows. She ended up kneeling on the small of his back, careful to avoid the spikes along his spine, squeezing and kneading and applying pressure in diverse ways. Nero was obviously in ecstasy. He purred and moaned in decadent satisfaction. A constant stream of drowsy compliments flowed from his lips. He languidly encouraged them to rub harder and deeper. Kendra grew weary, and Grandma periodically demonstrated other techniques for her and Seth to employ. Kendra despised working on Nero's feet the most, from the roughness of his cracked heels, to the smooth pads of his calluses, to the lumpy bunions on his toes. But she tried her best to follow Grandma's tireless example. Besides assisting with his legs and feet, Grandma labored on his head, neck, shoulders, back, arms, hands, chest, and abdomen. When they finally finished, Nero sat up with a euphoric smile. All the cunning had vanished from his bulbous eyes. He looked ready for the most satisfying nap of his life.
Closer to 100 minutes, Grandma said. But I wanted to do it right.
Thank you, he said giddily. I never imagined something like that.
He got to his feet, leaning against the wall of the cliff to steady himself.
You have amply earned your reward.
I've never felt anyone so full of knots and tension,
Grandma said.
I feel loose now, he said,
swinging his arms.
I will be right back with the information you seek.
Nero ducked into the cave.
I want to see his magic stone,
Seth mumbled.
Wait patiently,
Grandma chided, wiping perspiration from her brow.
You must be exhausted,
Kendra said.
I'm not in very good condition,
Grandma admitted.
That took a lot out of me.
She lowered her voice.
But it sure beats barrels of treasure that we don't have.
Seth wandered over to the brink of the ledge and stared down into the ravine. Grandma took a seat on the shelf where they had administered the massage, and Kendra waited beside her. Before long, Nero emerged. He still looked affable and relaxed, though not quite as loopy as before.
Stan is chained in the basement of the Forgotten Chapel.
Grandma's jaw tightened.
You're sure?
It was a little tricky finding him and sneaking a good look, considering who else is confined there. But yes, I am certain.
He's well?
He's alive.
Lena was with him?
The Naiad? Sure. I saw her too.
Was Muriel in the vicinity?
Muriel? Why would she... Oh, that's what that was. Ruth, the agreement was a single piece of information. But no, I didn't catch sight of her. I believe this concludes our arrangement.
He gestured toward the ladder.
if you will excuse me. I need to lie down.
Chapter 15, The Far Side of the Attic. Grandma refused to talk while they were in the ravine. She wore a dour, thoughtful expression and hushed any attempts at conversation. Kendra waited until they were back on the path beside the covered bridge to try her question again.
Grandma, Kendra began.
Not here, Grandma admonished. We must not discuss the situation out in the open.
She motioned for them to huddle close and continued in a hushed tone.
Let this suffice. We must go after your grandpa today. Tomorrow might be too late. We will return home immediately, get equipped, and go to the place where he is being held. I will reveal his exact whereabouts once we are indoors. Muriel may not yet know his location, and even if she does, I don't want her to learn that we know.
Grandma stopped whispering and hurried them along the path.
Sorry if I have been antisocial since leaving Nero, she said after they had walked in silence for a couple of minutes. I needed to devise a plan. You kids really did an exceptional job back there. Nobody should have to spend an afternoon rubbing a troll's feet. Seth was heroic on the logs, and Kendra did some well-timed bluffing during the negotiations. You both surpassed my expectations.
I never knew you were a masseuse, Kendra said.
I learned from Lena. She has collected expert instruction from around the globe. If you ever get a chance to receive a massage from her, don't turn it down.
Grandma tucked some errant strands of hair behind her ear. She became distant again for a moment, pursing her lips and staring remotely as she walked.
I have a few questions for you two, things we can talk about in the open. Have you met a man named Warren?
Warren?
Seth repeated.
Handsome and quiet, white hair and skin. Dale's brother.
No, Kendra said.
They might have brought him to the house on Midsummer Eve,
Grandma prodded.
We were with Grandpa Dale and Lena until after sundown, but never saw anybody else,
Seth said.
I never even heard him mentioned,
Kendra added.
Me neither,
Seth agreed. Grandma nodded.
He must have stayed at the cabin. Have you met Hugo?
Yeah,
Seth said.
He's awesome. I wonder where he went.
Grandma gave Seth a measuring glance.
I trust he has been attending to his chores in the barn.
I don't think so,
Kendra said.
We had to milk the cow yesterday.
You milked Viola?
Grandma said, plainly astonished.
How?
Kendra described how they had set up the ladders and slid down her teats. Seth added details about how milky they had gotten.
Resourceful children,
Grandma said.
Stan had told you nothing about her? We found her because she was mooing so loud,
Seth said.
She was shaking the whole barn.
It looked like her udder was going to explode,
Kendra said.
Viola is our milch cow,
Grandma said.
Every preserve has such an animal, though not all are bovine. She is older than this preserve, which was founded in 1711. At that time, she was brought over from Europe by ship, born from a milch cow on a preserve in the Pyrenees Mountains. She was about 100 years old when she made the voyage, and was already larger than an elephant. She has been here ever since, gradually gaining size each year.
Looks like she's about to outgrow the barn,
Seth said.
Her growth has slowed over the years, but yes, she may one day become too colossal for her current confines.
She provides the milk the fairies drink,
Kendra said.
More than the fairies drink it. Her ancient breed is nourished and worshipped by all creatures of fairydom. they place daily enchantments on her food and make secret offerings to honor and strengthen her. In return, her milk functions as an ambrosia central to their survival. It is no wonder that cows are still considered sacred in certain parts of the world.
She must make tons of dung,
Seth said.
Another blessing. Her manure is the finest fertilizer in the world, coaxing plants to mature much more quickly than usual, and sometimes to reach incredible proportions. By the power of her dung, we can reap multiple harvests from a field in a season, and many tropical plants flourish on this property that would otherwise perish. Did you kids happen to put milk out for the fairies?
No, Seth said. We spilled it all down the drain. We were mainly trying to calm down the cow.
No matter. The absence of milk might make the fairies a little ornery, but they'll get over it. We'll see they get some tomorrow at the latest.
So normally Hugo milks Viola,
Kendra surmised.
Correct. It is a standing order, so there must be a reason he has not carried it out during the past couple of days. You have not seen him since Midsummer Eve?
No.
He was probably assigned to watch over Warren and the cabin until summoned. He should come if we call.
Could something have happened to him?
Seth asked.
A golem may seem like little more than animated matter granted elementary intelligence, but most creatures on this preserve fear Hugo. Few could harm him if they tried. He will be our chief ally in rescuing your grandfather.
What about Warren?
Kendra asked.
Will he help too?
Grandma frowned.
You have not met him because his mind has been ruined. Dale has remained on this preserve mainly in order to care for him. Warren is lost in a catatonic stupor. Fablehaven has many stories. His is another tragic tale of a mortal venturing where he did not belong. Warren will be no help to us.
Anybody else?
Seth asked.
Like the satyrs.
Satyrs?
Grandma exclaimed.
When have you met satyrs? I may have some choice words for your grandfather when we find him.
We met them by accident in the woods,
Kendra assured her.
We were taking stew from what looked like a well, and they warned us that we were actually stealing from an ogress.
Those rogues were protecting their underhanded operation more than you. They have been pilfering her stew for years. The scoundrels didn't want to have to rebuild their thieving device. Probably sounded too much like work. Satyrs live for frivolity, the ultimate fair-weather friends. Your grandfather and I share a mutual respect with various beings on this preserve, but there is not much more loyalty than one would find out in the wild. The herd looks on as the sick or injured are brought down by predators. If your grandfather is to be rescued on such short notice, it will be our doing, with none but Hugo to aid us.
It was late afternoon when they reached the yard. Grandma stood with her hands on her hips, taking in the scene. The ruined treehouse, the damaged furniture strewn about the garden, the gaping, glassless windows.
Oh, I'm afraid to go inside,
she muttered.
You don't remember how bad it is?
Kendra asked.
She was a chicken, remember?
Seth said.
We ate her eggs.
Creases appeared on Grandma's brow.
It feels like such a betrayal to have your home violated,
she said softly.
I know sinister evils lurk in the woods, but they have never crossed that boundary.
Kendra and Seth followed Grandma across the yard and up the porch steps. Grandma stooped and picked up a copper triangle, attaching it to a hook hanging from a nail. Kendra remembered noticing the triangle dangling among the wind chimes. A short copper rod was linked to the triangle by a chain of beads. Grandma clanged the rod noisily around the inside of the triangle.
That should bring Hugo,
Grandma explained. She crossed the porch and paused in the doorway, staring into her home.
It looks like we were bombed,
she murmured.
Such senseless vandalism.
She roamed the gutted house in a somber daze, occasionally pausing to pick up a damaged frame and examine the torn photograph inside, or turn to run her hand along the remnants of a beloved piece of furniture. Grandma climbed the stairs and went to her room. Kendra and Seth watched her rummage through the closet, finally withdrawing a metal lunchbox.
"At least this is intact," Grandma said.
"Hungry?" Seth asked.
Kendra slapped him on the shoulder with the back of her hand.
"What is it, Grandma?"
"Follow me."
Downstairs in the kitchen, Grandma opened the lunchbox. She removed a handful of photographs.
"Help me lay these out."
The photos were of the house. Each room was shown from several angles. The exterior was also displayed from multiple perspectives. In total, there were more than 100 pictures. Grandma and the children began spreading them across the kitchen floor.
"We took these pictures in case the unthinkable ever occurred," Grandma said.
Kendra suddenly made the connection.
"For the brownies?"
"Clever girl," said Grandma. "I'm not sure whether they will be up to the challenge, considering the extent of the damage, but they have worked miracles in the past. I'm sorry this calamity befell us during your stay."
"You shouldn't be," Seth said. "It happened because of me."
"You mustn't assume all the blame," Grandma insisted.
"What else can we do?" Kendra said. "We caused it."
"Kendra didn't do anything," Seth said. "She tried to stop me. The whole thing is my fault."
Grandma regarded Seth pensively.
"You did not mean to harm Grandpa. Yes, you made him vulnerable through your disobedience. As I understand, you were commanded not to look out the window. Had you heeded the order, you would not have been tempted to open the window, and your grandfather would not have been taken. You must face that fact and learn from it. But the full blame for Stan's predicament is considerably more guilt than you deserve. Your grandfather and I are the caretakers of this estate. We are responsible for the actions of those we bring here, especially children. Stan allowed you to come here to do your parents a favor, but also because we need to start selectively sharing this secret with our posterity. We will not be around forever. The secret was shared with us, and a day came when the responsibility of this enchanted refuge fell on our shoulders. One day, we will have to pass the responsibility on to others."
She took Seth and Kendra by the hands and fixed them with a loving gaze.
"I know the mistakes you made were not deliberate or malicious. Your grandfather and I have made plenty of mistakes ourselves. So have all the people who have ever lived here, no matter how wise or cautious. Your grandfather must share the blame for placing you children in a situation where opening a window with kind intentions could cause such harm and destruction. And clearly, the fiends who abducted him are ultimately the most culpable."
Kendra and Seth were silent. Seth scrunched up his face.
"If it wasn't for me, Grandpa would be fine right now," he said,
fighting hard not to cry.
"And I would still be a chicken in a cage," Grandma said. "Let's worry about fixing the problem instead of the blame. Don't despair. I know we can set things right. Take me to Dale."
Seth nodded, sniffling and rubbing his forearm across his nose. He led the way across the back porch, weaving through the garden toward their destination.
"There really aren't many fairies," Grandma said. "I've never seen the yard so devoid of life."
"There haven't been many around ever since they attacked Seth," Kendra said. "Since Grandpa vanished, there have been even fewer."
When they stood over the painted, life-size metal statue of Dale, Grandma shook her head.
"I've never seen this particular enchantment, but that's certainly Dale."
"Can you help him?" Kendra asked.
"Perhaps, given sufficient time. Part of counteracting an enchantment is understanding who placed it and how." "We found tracks," Seth said.
He showed Grandma the print in the flower bed. Although the impression had faded a bit, it remained recognizable. Grandma frowned.
It doesn't look familiar. Many creatures run wild on festival nights that we otherwise never encounter, which is why we take cover indoors. The print may not even be a relevant clue. It could belong to the perpetrator, or to the mount the perpetrator rode. Or it could belong to something that just happened to step there sometime during the night.
So we just ignore Dale for now?
Kendra asked.
We have no alternative. Time is short. We can only hope that by rescuing your grandfather, we can shed more light on what caused Dale's condition and find a way to reverse the curse. Come.
They returned to the house. Grandma spoke over her shoulder as they mounted the stairs to the second floor.
There are a few special strongholds within the house. One is the room where you have been staying. Another is a second room on the other side of the attic.
I knew it,
Kendra said.
I could tell from the outside there had to be more to the attic, but I could never find a way in.
You were probably searching in the wrong place,
Grandma said, leading them down the hall to her room.
The two sides of the attic are not interconnected. When we get up there, I'll fill you in on my strategy.
Grandma crouched and picked through a broken nightstand. She found a few hairpins and used them to pile her hair into a matronly bun. Searching more, she located a key. She led them into the master bathroom, where she used the key to unlock a closet door. Instead of a closet, the door opened to reveal a second door, this one made of steel with a large combination wheel. A vault door. Grandma began spinning the wheel.
4 turns right to 11, 3 left to 28, 2 right to 3, 1 left to 31, and a half turn right to 18.
She pulled a lever, and the heavy door clacked open. Carpeted stairs led up to another door. Grandma went up first. Seth and Kendra joined her in the attic. This side of the attic was even larger than the playroom. Grandma flipped a switch, and several lights dispelled the dimness. A long workbench dominated one side of the room, the wall above it covered with tools supported on pegs. Handsome wooden cabinets lined the other walls. Various unusual objects littered the room. A birdcage, a phonograph, a battle axe, a hanging scale, a mannequin, a globe the size of a beach ball. Trunks and boxes were arranged in rows on the floor, leaving just enough aisle space to access them. Heavy curtains concealed the windows. Grandma motioned them over to the workbench, where they perched on stools.
"What's in all the boxes?"
Seth asked.
"Many things, most of them unsafe. This is where we guard our most prized weapons and talismans, spell books, ingredients for potions, all the good stuff."
"You can tell us more about Grandpa now?"
Kendra said.
"Yes. You heard Nero say that Stan and Lena are being held in the Forgotten Chapel. Let me summarize some history to bring the ramifications into view. Long ago, this land was possessed by a powerful demon named Bahamut. For centuries, he terrorized the natives who dwelt in the region. They learned to avoid certain areas, yet even with these precautions, nowhere in the vicinity was truly safe. The natives made whatever offerings demons seemed to require, but still they lived in fear. When a group of Europeans offered to overthrow the demon in exchange for a claim to the lands it haunted, the incredulous local leaders consented. Aided by mighty allies and potent magic, the Europeans successfully subdued and imprisoned the demon. Some years later, they founded Fablehaven on the land they wrested from Bahamut. Years passed. In the early 1800s, a community comprised chiefly of extended family had developed on this preserve. They built a number of dwellings around the original mansion. This was before the current house and barn were constructed. The old mansion still stands deep within this property, though most of the flimsier structures around it have been swallowed by time and the elements. Although their homes are gone, they did construct one lasting structure, a church. In 1826, thanks to human frailty and foolishness, Bayomet nearly escaped. It could have been a serious disaster, because none who remained on the preserve possessed the resources or knowledge to contend successfully with an entity of his power. Although the jailbreak was prevented, the experience proved too unnerving for most who lived here, and the majority departed. The prison that held the demon had been damaged. With outside help, Bayomet was moved to a new holding area in the basement of the church. Meetings there ceased a few months after that, and in the intervening years it has become known as the Forgotten Chapel.
So, Bayomet is still there? Kendra said.
Believe me, we would know if Bayomet had been loosed. I doubt anyone in the world has the capacity to recapture that fiend if he were to get free. His kind have been absent for too long, imprisoned or destroyed. Those who knew how to defeat such a foe have passed on, with none to replace them. Which brings me to my greatest concern, that Muriel might try to release Bayomet.
Would she do something that stupid?
Seth cried.
Muriel is a student of evil. She was originally imprisoned for tampering with such things. If she reaches the Forgotten Chapel first, which she may have already done, assuming her imps have apprised her of the situation, we will have to neutralize her in order to save your grandfather. If we allow her enough time to release Bayomet, we will all need saving. That is why I must try to stop her immediately.
Not just you,
Seth said.
Hugo and I will handle this. You kids have done enough.
What?
Seth exclaimed.
No way!
Retrieving your grandfather should not be too difficult. But if the worst-case scenario transpires and I fail, Fablehaven could fall. Bayomet never agreed to the treaty that protects this sanctuary. None of his kind would. He has a claim to this land and is a being of sufficient power to overthrow the treaty, plunging the preserve into endless darkness. Every day would become like those fearful festival nights, and this property would be forever uninhabitable for all but the denizens of Shadow. Any mortal trapped here would fall prey to horrors too terrible to contemplate.
Could that really happen? Kendra asked quietly.
It would not be the first time,
Grandma said.
Preserves have fallen ever since they were instituted. The causes are myriad, usually stemming from human folly. Some have been reclaimed, others fell beyond redemption. Currently, there are at least 30 fallen preserves in the world. Perhaps most unnerving are the recent whispers about the Society of the Evening Star.
Maddox told us about them,
Seth said.
Grandpa got a letter warning him to be on the lookout, Kendra added.
Traditionally, the fall of a preserve was an uncommon occurrence, maybe one or two a century. About 10 years ago, rumors began to circulate that the Society of the Evening Star was working mischief again. Around the same time, preserves began falling at an alarming rate. 4 have fallen over the past 5 years.
Why would anybody do that?
Kendra asked.
Many have sought the answer to that question,
Grandma said.
To gain riches, power. We who safeguard the preserves are essentially conservationists. We don't want to see the magnificent, magical creatures of the world go extinct. We try not to discriminate against creatures of shadow. We want them to survive as well. But we do compartmentalize them when necessary. Members of the Society of the Evening Star mask their true intentions with rhetoric, alleging that we wrongfully imprison creatures of darkness.
Do you?
Seth asked.
The most violent and malevolent demons are imprisoned, yes. but that is for the safety of the world. In pursuit of endless carnage and unlawful dominion, they clashed anciently with good humans and creatures of light, and are paying a heavy price for losing. Many other sinister entities were admitted to preserves only on condition that they would agree to certain limitations, agreements they entered voluntarily. A common restriction is that they are not permitted to leave the preserve, so the society considers many of these creatures also incarcerated. They argue that the covenants of the preserves create artificial rules that upset the natural order of things. They consider the majority of humanity expendable. Their premise is that chaos and bloodshed are preferable to just regulations. We disagree.
Do you think the Evening Star people are involved in kidnapping Grandpa?
Kendra asked. Grandma shrugged.
Possibly. I hope not. If so, it was done with great subtlety. There are powerful limits to how any outsider can intrude on a preserve, and our preserve is more secret than most.
Grandma opened a drawer and pulled out a rolled parchment. Unrolling it, she revealed a map of the world. Large dots and X's were located on diverse portions of the map, aside from the labeling of major cities.
The X's mark fallen preserves,
Grandma said.
The dots mark active ones.
Fablehaven isn't marked,
Kendra noticed.
Sharp eyes,
Grandma said.
There are 37 active preserves noted on the map, and 5 unmarked preserves, of which Fablehaven is one. Even among those most trusted in our community, very few people know about the unmarked preserves. None know of them all.
Why?
Seth asked.
Special artifacts of great power are hidden on those 5 preserves.
What artifacts?
Seth asked, excited.
I cannot say. I don't know most of the details myself. The artifact here at Fablehaven is not in our possession. It is guarded at an undisclosed location on the property. Evildoers, particularly the Society of the Evening Star, would like nothing more than to collect the artifacts from the hidden preserves.
So there are many reasons Fablehaven must be protected,
Kendra said. Grandma nodded.
Your grandfather and I are prepared to give our lives if necessary.
Maybe none of us should go after Grandpa,
Kendra said.
Can't we get help?
There are some who would come to our aid if summoned, but I need to stop Muriel and find your grandfather today. Nobody could reach us that quickly. Fablehaven is protected by secrecy. At times, this becomes a hindrance. I do not know what spells bind Bayomet, but I am certain that, given sufficient time, Muriel will find a way to unravel them. I must act now.
Grandma slid off the stool, walked down an aisle, opened a trunk, and withdrew an ornate box embossed with vines and flowers. From the box, she removed a small crossbow, not much larger than a pistol. She also took out a small arrow with black fletching, an ivory shaft, and a silver head.
Cool,
Seth cried.
I want one.
This dart will slay any being that was ever mortal, including the enchanted or undead, if I can lodge it in a lethal place.
Where is lethal?
Kendra asked.
The heart and the brain are the surest. Witches can be tricky. This is the only talisman I am certain will slay Muriel.
You're going to kill her?
Kendra whispered.
Only as a last resort. First, I will try to have Hugo capture her. But the stakes are too high for us to sally forth without a failsafe. If the golem should unforeseeably disappoint me, I lack the skills to subdue Muriel myself. Believe me, the last thing I want is her blood on my hands. Killing a mortal is not quite as grievous a crime as killing a mystical being, but it would still dissolve most of the protection afforded me by the treaty. I would probably have to banish myself from the preserve.
But she's trying to destroy the whole preserve,
Seth complained.
Not by directly killing anyone,
Grandma said.
The chapel is neutral ground. If I go there and kill her, even if I can justify the act, the protection of the treaty will never again be mine.
I heard Dale shooting guns and stuff the night the creatures came through our window,
Kendra said.
Creatures were invading our territory,
Grandma explained.
Regardless of the reason, by coming into this house, they surrender all their protections. Under those circumstances, Dale could slay them with no fear of retribution, meaning his status under the treaty would remain secure. The same principle could work against you if you were to venture into certain forbidden areas of Fablehaven. If you were thus stripped of all protection, it would be open hunting season on Kendra and Seth, which is precisely why those areas are prohibited.
I don't get who would punish you for killing Muriel,
Seth said.
The mystical barriers that protect me would be lifted, and the punishment would naturally follow. You see, as mortals, we can choose to break the rules. The mystical creatures that seek asylum here are not afforded that luxury. Many would break the rules if they could, but they are bound. As long as I obey the rules, I am safe. But if I lose the protections afforded by the treaty, the consequences of my vulnerability would inevitably follow.
So does that mean Grandpa is alive for sure?
Kendra asked in a small voice.
They can't kill him or anything?
Stan has kept the rules pertaining to bloodshed, and so, even on their night of revelry, the dark creatures of this preserve would not be able to kill him, nor would they be able to force him to go to a place that would enable them to kill him. Imprisoned, tortured, driven insane, turned to lead, maybe. But he has to be alive, and I have to go after him.
And I have to come with you,
Seth said.
You need backup. Hugo is my backup.
Seth scrunched his face, resisting tears.
I'm not going to lose you guys, especially when it's my fault.
Grandma Sorensen embraced Seth.
Sweetheart, I appreciate your courage, but I'm not about to risk losing a grandchild.
Won't we be in just as much danger here as we would be if we were with you?
Kendra said.
If the demon gets loose, we'll all be fried.
I mean to send you away, off the preserve,
Grandma said. Kendra folded her arms.
So we can wait outside the gate until our parents get back, tell them you were killed by a demon, and insist we can't go to the house because it's really a magical preserve that has fallen into darkness?
Your parents do not know the true nature of this place,
Grandma said,
nor would they believe without seeing.
Exactly, Kendra said. If you fail, the first thing Dad will do is go straight to your house and investigate. Nothing we could say would keep him away. And he'll probably call the cops, and the whole world will find out about this place.
They wouldn't see anything,
Grandma said.
But many would die inexplicably.
And actually, they could see the cow, even without the milk, because Viola remains a mortal being.
We came in handy with the troll,
Seth said.
And no matter what you do or say, I'll follow you anyways.
Grandma tossed up her hands.
Sincerely, children, I think all will be fine. I know I described a dire scenario, but things like this happen on preserves from time to time, and we normally get them resolved. I don't see why this would be any different. Hugo will mend the problem without serious incident, and if it comes to it, I am a crackshot with the crossbow. If you will just wait outside the gates, I'll come for you before it gets too late.
But I want to see Hugo pound Muriel,
Seth insisted.
If we're supposed to possibly inherit this place someday, you won't always be able to protect us from danger,
Kendra said.
Wouldn't it be good experience for us to watch you and Hugo handle the situation? Maybe we can even help.
Field trip!
Seth cried. Grandma eyed them lovingly.
Oh, you kids are growing up so fast,
she sighed.